Safar, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. Talking some college football. And to help us do that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend David Ubben from The Athletic. David, good morning. How are you?
Morning, guys. I'm good. Thanks.
Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. David, I want to start on the Vanderbilt front. So they survive in overtime against Auburn this weekend. They're 8-2. They've got Kentucky coming up and then a trip to Neyland to take on Tennessee at the end of the year. What do you make of kind of where they fit into the landscape right now in the college football playoff picture? And I guess your thoughts on their chances to get to 10-2 and maybe get in the college football playoff, knowing that Kentucky and Tennessee are what's standing in their way.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately, I think it's pretty simple. You know, you lose either the next two games, it ain't happening. You win both, you're almost certainly in. There is some doubt because the resume is not the best, that maybe at 10-2 they get squeezed out. I'm just skeptical that an SEC team is going to be left out at 10-2. You know, they don't have any like headline making wins, but they got some good ones. So that's kind of where I'm at, and I think there's definitely a chance. You know, if you end up on the right side of the bracket, and depending on how the conference champions sort out, because remember, the conference champions do not get those top four seeds. So, you know, there's a chance they could be hosting a game, you know, depending on how the next month sorts out, and that'd be pretty wild.
Well, I hear you. Yeah, that would be wild. I hear you on the 10-2 SEC team. I guess the question, you know, like right now, Austin Mock for us has, you know, like first five out, he's got Texas, then Oklahoma, then Vanderbilt. Like the 9-3 Texas that gets one more huge win in there because of their schedule, beat Vanderbilt, right? Like, I guess that would be the one thing that I would look at that could be problematic. I mean, I'm generally with you. Like, I think it's going to sort itself out that if they're 10-2, they're going to be in. And a win at Tennessee is a big deal, which I have my doubts they'll get, actually. But if
they
do.
I mean, it's a big deal culturally, but it's probably not going to be a top 25 win if they win because it probably knocks them out.
Well, I guess that's true. I mean, at the time, it will be a top 25 win probably, right? As long as Tennessee takes care of business, wins at Florida, like they're right around the bottom. But I guess, you know, that's where it gets into also the committee, right, David? Like, it's like I still believe, yeah, culturally, sure. But also I think that Tennessee is a good team and Tennessee at Tennessee is a good win. Right, I think the committee would recognize that, whether it technically counts as a top 25. I don't know. I mean, you tell me. Last week, they're like, I mean, Mac Rhodes really was into telling us about all the film they watch. I mean, he's really into. I mean, we're looking at up the middle, and we're looking at like what the box safeties are tackling. I mean, it's like, I have no idea what's going on with these people.
I don't know. I mean, if you want to impress Mac Rhodes, you got to make sure your color coordination is on point on game day. I can guarantee you that. But listen, I think you're right. I really think it is as simple as just beat, you know, Kentucky and Tennessee. I think the bigger question is if you can slide up the bracket and get to host. I think we'll have to see. But I'm like you. I think ultimately you're not going to trust everybody to take care of business in the next 3 weeks. You know, you got rivalry week. You got teams, you know, still – able to lose. The ACC seems like they're playing hot potato. We could have a, you know, there's a path, Joe, to a no-bid ACC.
Yes.
Are you aware of this?
Yes. So, I saw Ralph brought it up first. I'm like, oh, my God, he's right.
Yes, it's probably not going to happen, but if you want to see it happen, you should buy some Blue Devils gear and start cheering on Duke. So, yeah.
So, David, what about the Heisman Trophy race here? Because you've got, you know, obviously Julian Sayin at Ohio State. You've got Mendoza with Indiana, Ty Simpson at Alabama. You know, what about Pavia? Like, where does he factor into that race? What do you make of how the Heisman race is shaping up as we're in November now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the numbers are okay. I think Pavia can play his way to New York City. I mean, if he has two, you know, I guess what he does against Kentucky is kind of irrelevant. If he has a big game, that would help his numbers. But beating Tennessee and being the reason they beat Tennessee, you know, carrying Vandy to a college football playoff bid might be enough to get a ticket to New York. I'm skeptical that he can do enough to win the whole thing. But we'll see, you know, if Indiana stumbles. Like, you know, if Julian Sain has a couple slow games and, you know, Mendoza gets rocked in the Big Ten championship game, then that probably changes things a little bit. You know, we'll see if Ty Simpson and Alabama, like, if they lose the Iron Bowl, or again, you know, if they have a bad game in the SEC championship, then that could change some things. So we'll see. There's a lot of football left. So, you know, I think the biggest thing working in Pavia's favor is this is not a really strong Heisman class in general. There's nobody that anybody is like, well, clearly that guy, you know, is better than everybody else, or, you know, it's a pretty wide open field and the bar is kind of low. You know, I've been telling people all year, like, if Ashton Jeanty did this year what he did last year, this race would already be wrapped up. So, you know, I think ultimately he's got to have some big games down the stretch, but he might need some help from the guys ahead of him.
Yeah, I got to say, I agree that this is a, you know, obviously it's an opportune year. You know, I just, like, the best player, best team thing, I hate to dock, like, an Ohio State quarterback or an Alabama quarterback. I think they're both really good players. But just for having such an edge, and frankly, Mendoza, like, I mean, it's pretty clear that if you play quarterback for Kurt Cignetti, you're probably going to have really good numbers and have a lot of answers out there that other players don't have, right? Like, if you want to look at it that way and say, look at the advantages those guys have, and then look at what this guy has done to carry freaking Vanderbilt to the playoff. Like, I was kind of out on him, but he has 891 yards, 8 touchdowns in the last 2 games. He completely saved them against Auburn. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know. I think you're right. There probably aren't enough people who, well, frankly, will even look that closely. You know, I mean, I hate to say that about Heisman voters, but there's a million of them, you know. But I do feel like he actually could have a case if, I think the numbers have to be absurd and he has to, like, you know, do some special stuff. And, like, you could make the case, like, bringing that team to the playoff versus people with all these advantages, why not give it to the guy who carried a team?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not super thoughtful during the season about the Heisman. When it gets down to crunch time, I feel like I am. And my criteria, you know, I look at, one, like, the production does matter to me. Two, are you the reason why your team is succeeding? I think that is really, really important to me, and that's a big reason why, like, Sain hasn't been on my ballot all year. I think the defense first, and you're throwing to 2 NFL receivers, and, like, the numbers are great, but, like, he hasn't had to really do anything. You know, they're not down 10-0, and like, I just don't think that he, like, it's the same thing with the Stetson Bennett thing, where people wanted to vote him up, and it's like, he's, like, the fourth best player on his team. You know, that to me, and then, of course, like I said, it has to pass the smell test if you tell me this is the best player in the country. And so that, like, with the Pavia piece, like, is sort of complicated because obviously, like, you know, he looks like a wrestler running around out there playing quarterback.
Yeah, he's not the best, you know, NFL prospect, but you
exactly,
can be the best college player.
Think, like, and then there's sort of a amorphous element of, for me at least, of who made me say wow the most. And ultimately, like, Vanderbilt showing up in the bracket on Selection Sunday is, like, the biggest wow that there can be. You know, the numbers are okay. I definitely think he is clearly the reason why his team is succeeding. The production is okay, and we'll have to kind of see. I when we get down to it again, I think some of this is going to be how he looks in this couple games, and if he can beat Tennessee and give Vandy. I mean, is that the biggest win for Vandy in school history if they win that game? You guys would know more than I would. I would say,
yeah, if
probably.
It gets them to the playoff, yeah, absolutely,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, I think that would be a pretty huge closing argument for him, you know, championship week aside. So I think he'll be in the mix. I just think, again, it's so wide open as is. Nobody has really made that strong of a case. I think Ty Simpson's playing really, really good football, in terms of what he's doing. And the fact that, Bama, the defense is okay. It's not great, and they really don't have that much of a running game to speak of, I do think speaks to him. And the receiver group is pretty young, and Ryan Williams is, you know, not necessarily a world beater, although he's very talented. So I just think there's a lot of football left to play, and there's a lot of opportunity for a lot of guys to make some pretty convincing final arguments here in the last couple weeks.
All right, David. So is Lane Kiffin staying at Ole Miss, or is he going? And if he's going, where is he going?
I mean, I think there's a pretty compelling case for him to stay. I think Florida would be really attractive for him. I'm skeptical maybe that he would feel like he can be himself at LSU. And then obviously the president situation, the AD situation, that would give me pause. Like if somebody is hiring you and then that probably is not going to be your boss in like a year, that would make me nervous if I was him. And then, you know, with Ole Miss, ultimately what you're asking Lane Kiffin to do is go somewhere else and build something that's pretty similar to what he already has. You know, Ole Miss, they were probably good enough to win the national championship last year. I'm not sure that they have the team this year, but like in terms of what you need, he's got a lot of what he needs there. And I think there's something to be said for having the capital that he has now. People will turn on you in a hurry. And so if I'm him, I'm thinking really hard about staying. But if I was a betting man, I'm betting we're going to see him, you know, in a Gators visor this time next year.
Interesting. Well, as someone who now lives in Bill Belichick's neck of the woods, sort of, David, quietly, maybe they look like, you know, they've actually improved as a football team. Like there's actually some coaching that's going on. Like, are you feeling any differently about him right now than you did a month ago?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, it was so bad that there was only one way to go. And I did say, like, in September, you know, when this was going off the rails, I was like, the surest test of kind of where this thing is what does this team look like in, you know, November and late November? Are they improving? And I think obviously that is happening. That said, Syracuse is a mess. You know, they lost Steve Angeli, and they have been sort of just – trying to stay above float and failing since then. And like Stanford, like they're just not very good. You've got a lame duck coaching staff. You're sort of just there. So there's something to be said for winning games and beating power five teams, you know, power four teams, which, you know, this year Syracuse and Stanford are mostly in name only. So props to that. But like, I don't know. I mean, they should have beat Cal, but, you know, Cal is, again, kind of a weird team. So they definitely improved, and I think they deserve a lot of credit there. That said, you know, they haven't actually done that much yet, so we'll see.
Well, David, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. We will talk to you soon, my friend, and enjoy the rest of the college football season.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
David Ubben from The Athletic. Our guest here on Robbie and Rex. We'll react to what David had to say, get into Vanderbilt in the college football playoff picture coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Appreciate David Ubben for being with us in the last segment. Joe, he thinks it's pretty simple. Vanderbilt gets to 10-2, they're going to be in the college football playoff. If you're a Vanderbilt fan kind of looking at the picture right now, and again, we'll find out what the latest college football playoff rankings are tonight when they have their stupid show that they do every week. I'm interested to see where they are in the rankings tonight. If you're a Vanderbilt fan, what are you looking at around the country as you obviously have to take care of business yourself? What else are you hoping to happen around the country as the next few weeks unfold here before the college football playoff?
Well, you like Ubben said, like the idea that the ACC, like Duke, you know, gets in tiebreakers, wins the ACC title and isn't one of the top five conference champs, so doesn't the no ACC in the playoff. That's wild. But one ACC bid, that's what you want. One Big 12 bid, that's what you want. I think Texas Tech has established themselves as the best team. I mean, they are, you know, that's a legit. They paid for a hell of a team. They've got a hell of a team. You know, they lost the one game without their quarterback. But right now, like, for example, the projected bracket by Austin Mock for us at The Athletic, he's got BYU and is the 10 seed. There's a team to root against if you're a Vanderbilt fan. You know, get the Big 12 to the point where they're also just a one-bid league. Now, if Texas Tech were to be upset, you know, in the Big 12 title game, that's where you can get screwed, right? But, you know, you want BYU to lose another game. And frankly, you know, really, you just and you don't want the Big Ten to get a third team, or to, I'm sorry, to get a fourth team. The Big Ten, pretty solid in there with Oregon winning at Iowa, and we know Ohio State and Indiana. I mean, they're going to play in the Big Ten title. They're going to be in. Oregon's going to be in. Is there a fourth Big Ten team that could come in and take a spot? Could Michigan, if they beat Ohio State, you're rooting like heck for Ohio State to just go handle business in Ann Arbor. Could USC sneak in there? You're rooting for them to – in fact, USC, Oregon play each other. You're rooting for Oregon against USC.
Yep.
So keep the Big Ten to three. If you can get the ACC and the Big 12 to two, okay, so that leaves you – so there's six spots, right? Yeah, the Big Ten would be three, one, one, that's five. You group of five, there's six. So that could leave – am I doing my math right?
I believe so.
Three, yeah. Four, five, six.
Yeah.
So that could leave the SEC with six spots. Now, people would just absolutely raise hell around the country about that. But remember, last year, they got three, and the SEC people raised hell. So, I mean, first of all, last year, to me, the SEC getting three, I just, in case anyone in that committee is worried about perception, I mean, I think that helps. This is why we shouldn't have stupid auto bids. This is why the Big Ten commissioner slash goofball Tony Petitti wants the four auto because he doesn't have four teams that should be in the playoff. No, we need four. We need four no matter what. No, you don't. But also, this is why the SEC doesn't want it, because the SEC could seriously have six teams. We know Bama, A&M, Georgia's solid now.
Yep.
Ole Miss is solid. Those four are solid. I mean, they're almost, you know, crazy stuff could happen, but those four are solid. And then you have three more. You have Texas, Oklahoma, Vanderbilt.
Yep.
Now, according to Austin, Vanderbilt would be next in line after them. He doesn't have them as a first five out, but in terms of probability based on the scheduling, because Texas and Oklahoma have
Texas has Georgia this week, and they also have Texas A&M remaining.
What you're rooting for Vanderbilt, you're rooting for them to lose both. Get them out of there.
Yep.
They beat you, and that would be where it could get really interesting, like I said to Ubbin there. 9-3 Texas having beat you and really having throttled you for a lot of that day, and you came back and made it look better. With the wins that they would have, either of those wins is huge.
Yep.
Versus you at 10-2, that could get dicey, and especially. But again, even if that's the case, you both could get in as long as Oklahoma, because they have tough. Well, they're at Alabama this week. They lose at Alabama this week, they're out. So you're rooting for Alabama this week. I think enough. You look at all these things that can shake out. Some of them won't work in your favor, but they're not all going to work against you, and that's why I think I'm with Ubbin. Like, if they go 10-2, I'm pretty confident they're in the field.
It was interesting. Did you hear Lane Kiffin going on his little soapbox, I guess, yesterday?
No.
About how, like, Texas A&M should be number one, and it's kind of amazing that they're not number one based on – I mean, they went up to Notre Dame and won on the road, and their metrics are the best in the country and all this other stuff.
Well, that was my column last week, yeah. And Indiana fans really loved that one.
Well, he's like – what? And this is my biggest problem with the College Football Playoff Committee, and we've talked about this for years at this point, so it's not going to change as they move forward. It's like criteria matters in certain situations, and then all of a sudden it doesn't. And it matters one week, but then all of a sudden it changes as the next week comes on, which is just why this is such an imperfect way of doing things, deciding who's in the playoff by the committee. And by the way, frankly,
it is imperfect.
Like, if the committee's worried about perception, just put the best teams in, man. Like, that's the whole idea of this thing. But if it's six from the SEC, sorry, it's six from the SEC.
100%. But that's why, I mean, like last year, the fact that they, I mean, I think they got it right last year. You know, it was controversial, but I think they got it right because of the way Bama and Ole Miss screwed it up at the end. You know, I'm not saying the three-loss team should never be in, but I think they got it right last year. And so, yeah, that could be getting it right this year. And I agree, it's imperfect. We're always going to complain about it. We complain every year about the NCAA Basketball Selection Committee. I sure as hell don't want Tony Petitti's plan where we're just going to do the auto bids thing and the committee is just there to seed the field. I mean, I'd rather have human beings have common sense, again, like they did 2 years ago when everybody went nuts, but they were correct in keeping Florida State out because they were never going to do a damn thing in the playoff. Human beings did that. Good job. Ubben and everybody I work with is still mad about it. Like, no, they got it right. But, yes, it's imperfect, and we'll have something to complain about tonight. Also, you know, on the Pavia front, a couple more things. It is interesting. I think it's an uphill battle. I have my doubts he'll actually win the thing. He should be in New York. There's some more stuff from Vanderbilt here. Vandy's 11th in points. They've played six of the top 50 teams in scoring defense: Texas, Bama, LSU, Missouri, Auburn, South Carolina. Indiana has faced two, for example. Pavia is also fourth in passer rating and one of two players leading his team in passing yards and rushing yards, which is, of course, Haynes King would be the other one. I mean, you know, the numbers have never been really his huge friend here, but the last 2 weeks they are. So what if he has two more huge statistical games?
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, we will see.
Probably, like Ubben said, you're probably going to need a stumble somewhere. Like, you know, you're going to need, like, Mendoza. Yeah. Like, Mendoza to lose and look bad against Ohio State, but Ohio State to win that game because their defense dominates, and Sands. I think some people think that way. Like, Sands, like, dude, this is – come on. I mean, he's good, but, like, how easy can it be? You have the best defense in the country and the best receivers in the country. Pretty good.
Pretty good. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. We will get back into our Titans head coaching conversation from earlier in the show. The Giants have fired Brian Daboll, two rookie quarterbacks dealing with head coaching changes earlier in their career. How big of a deal is it? And how does the Daboll news impact the Titans? We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. The YouTube chat flowing as well today on the program. Otis does not care about the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, I think he said that before. Like, stop complaining, man. I mean, the Heisman Trophy is one of the most – is the Heisman Trophy the most discussed individual award in sports?
Probably.
Probably. I mean, it's not – you know, college football is the number two sport after the NFL, but I think the Heisman Trophy is more discussed than, like, the NFL MVP.
I would agree.
Like Cy Young. I mean, depending on your market and all that stuff, but yeah, it just, I mean, it's just like college football. Like, it's been part of the fabric of the sports country for more than a century. So, you know, that's part of it. It's just a.
By the way, there is a local player of interest that does have a chance to win it.
There is also that. Yes. Also, I think Brad from Clarksville on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, he said Notre Dame dingbat, which I assume he was telling me, and I should have said this. Yes. Also, if you're a Vanderbilt fan, root for Pitt. Even though Pat Narduzzi is like, yeah, beat us by 100, I don't care.
That was Pat, would you say this game's a must-win for your program? Not really. I think we could lose 100 points, and as long as we win the ACC games, who cares?
Yep. He's like, they can beat us 110-10. I don't care. Now, I think Pitt.
It's inspiring.
I think Pitt. Well, little Narduzzi.
Gamesmanship.
Maybe, you know, little reverse psychology type thing. But that is, they could beat them. I mean, Pitt at home, I think, has a shot. You know, their defense is, it's a feast or famine defense. Notre Dame's offense is really good. Pitt's offense, though, is going to, like, they're going to score points. So if you're a Vanderbilt fan, definitely root for that. If Notre Dame gets another loss, they will not be in the playoff. People are mad about where they're ranked, and I agree they're ranked too high for what they've done, for sure.
Yes.
But one more loss, and then you can get them out of the two. So that was, by the way, so I was going through all the six. I didn't include them. That's why he said Notre Dame dingbat.
So it'd be five.
I get it.
Yeah,
so it'd be five SEC if Notre Dame's in. Get them out of the picture, and, yeah, half the field could be SEC. Oh, how exciting.
I'm sure people would love it. Let's head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Trey to the program. Trey, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, no problem. Hey, thank y'all for taking my call. Hey, I want to say that I just wanted to talk about Vanderbilt and the Tennessee game. That game really scares me because, for one, you know, Vanderbilt going into a hostile, you know, environment at Neyland. And number two, they can't afford to go down in that game. I know they like to go down and come back, but they cannot go down in that game, because if they go down, they probably will get dragged. And I don't want to see them get dragged, so they're going to have to play up to the competition. They can't play to the competition of a South Carolina or Ole Miss. They got to play up to the competition of the Tennessee Volunteers. And I'm optimistic, but it's going to be a tough game. And I just want to know what y'all think about it. And I love y'all. Y'all have a good day, okay?
Thank you, Trey. Appreciate it. I don't know that Ole Miss is the best example in that. They're pretty good.
Yeah, Ole Miss would probably be a higher level than Tennessee right now.
They would. They would be a higher level. I mean, look, first off, I don't think you're going to have to worry about – you may have to worry about plenty of things if you're a Vanderbilt fan of the Tennessee game. Like, can your defense stop them at all is probably at the top of that list. But the intensity level and the readiness to play, I don't think you're going to have to worry about in that one.
No, in fact, I want to say – I don't know if Big Joe is sunning himself in Key West. Is that? But I want to say he said something yesterday about like Tennessee might just have be dead for that game. Yesterday, I'm like, dude, come on. I mean, you know, maybe Boo Carter because he doesn't.
Yeah, he's got
care.
1 foot out the door already.
Yeah, but no, Tennessee. You think those guys?
They'll be ready to play.
They will be absolutely ready to play. They are 100% in on shutting up Diego Pavia, just like basically every team that plays him.
Yeah.
And certainly they are. I mean,
talk
about
well.
Running Tennessee during the offseason. Like the intensity level of that game should not be any sort of conversation.
So, Joe, Brian Daboll fired by the New York Giants, which now means that both Cam Ward and Jackson Dart, early in their careers, are dealing with a coaching change and new play callers on the horizon. Ward already has a new play caller, and he'll be on number 3 by the time they hire the next head coach coming up here. So there's that to deal with. We talked about it earlier. How big of a deal is that for the young quarterback? I mean, if you look recently, Caleb Williams had his coach fired last year around Thanksgiving time, and it seems to be working out pretty well for him in year 2 with year 1 under Ben Johnson. Drake May had his coach fired last year. Vrabel's come in. They're 8-2, and depending on where you look, Drake May is the co-favorite to win the NFL MVP award right now. So it can work if you change a head coach and you make the right hire in the immediate aftermath of it. We'll see if the Titans can do that. What do you make of the Daboll firing, what this means for Dart and Ward, who are now in very similar situations? And I don't know, like, does Daboll being available, not as a head coach, but maybe as an OC, factor into things for the Tennessee Titans?
Yeah. LaJuan to trade for Cam Ward, so he can come coach Cam Ward and be Robert Saleh's DC. See, I never – it's like some of these things, you just put people together, and then maybe there's like some history. Like at some point down the road, somebody will be like, yeah, you know, Liam Cohen and Robert Saleh, that'd be a great pairing. But it's like, no, probably not. I don't know of any Saleh Daboll issues. Now, they were the two New York head coaches.
Daboll's an intense guy.
Going head-to-head. Yeah, and so is Saleh. It's obviously it's another example of, like you said, the young quarterback immediately having to change things over. But if you make the right choice, then that can be a good thing for the young quarterback. So that's what the Titans are charged with doing. There are definitely going to be, I think, some good OC candidates if the Titans don't go the way of, the head coach who is his own OC. And I don't think they will. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to do the – well, I suppose you could technically say that Nagy, Arthur Smith, and McCarthy are that, right? Like, I guess. But I don't know. I feel like the Titans – want to get someone more like Vrabel in here.
Yeah.
You know, which is funny. And maybe I'm wrong, but that's just what I think that they're going to do, which, again, I think Saleh is like the obvious choice if that's what your goal is. But you got some OC possibilities if that is what you do. Mike McDaniel, I think, will be out there too.
One texter said, Cam Ward's top 2 NFL coaches are already fired in midseason. Do not let him pick the next coach. He goes back to the Fortnite stream, where he was naming, his top 5 wide receivers and
Treylon Burks,
running backs.
Top 2.
The coaches came up. He said, this is the quote from them. Quote, I'm not naming the top 5, but I'm naming 5 head coaches that I like. Number 1, Brian Callahan. Number 2, Stefanski. Number 3, Daboll. Number 4, Pete Carroll. Number 5, Aaron Glenn. 2 of the 5.
Okay.
Gone. And we'll see. Number 2 could be gone too.
Jeez, man, and Pete Carroll too. This is like the curse, King Midas in reverse here from Cam Moore.
We're not going to consult you at all on the next head coach.
You know who I really like? Brian Kelly's doing a hell of a job down there at LSU. I think he's winning the Natty this year.
Bill Belichick doing a great job down there in North Carolina. Good stuff.
I forgot that part of it. I remembered the Treylon Burks. Didn't he say like a top two receiver?
It's top five.
Top five receiver. Yeah, Treylon Burks. He had some big plays last week.
Hey, Pete Carroll had, all those guys had like top three picks in the draft. He's just covering his bases.
Oh, yeah, people he had talked to who.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I actually talked to this guy.
I actually have spoken with all of these people.
The only five guys who tried to, pick me in the draft, so I'll pick them.
Yeah. Indy Ben says, both of the quarterbacks you listed, talking about Caleb Williams and Drake May, are much better than Cam Ward and were much better prospects. That's from Indy Ben on the text line.
I don't disagree. I think that we can all agree on that. We talked about that about 10,000 times. Indy Ben, where were you? You just cherry picking things here? No, I mean, that's true. But again, I think your point in bringing this up is that sometimes it can work in your favor to do this.
People always act like if you fire the head coach early in the quarterback's career that you're just dooming the quarterback and that the quarterback's totally screwed if that's what you do. And I'm just here to tell you that while it's not ideal, there are two very recent examples that seem to be working out very well in the NFL of quarterbacks who are rookies who at different stages had their coaches fired and have played pretty well this year.
And even though, yes, they are good prospects, they're better prospects, they also, like, I think we could all objectively say their situations have improved. Ben Johnson's an improvement. It's a better situation for Caleb Williams. And McDaniels with Vrabel's head coach seems to be great for Drake May. It seems to be a great combination of, the Vrabel, come here, boy, let me hit you, and I'm going to throw you in the locker. And then, McDaniels, who, whenever he's coordinating offense in New England, he's a genius. Yep. He's just a turd everywhere else, but just keep him up in Foxborough.
615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts to get to on the NFL head coaching Cam Ward front. We will get into more of that coming up next. 615-737-1025, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Final segment of the day, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Indy Ben catches some strays every time he comments. Him and Trey both. Indy Ben and Trey catching a lot of strays on the text line, on the YouTube chat over the last few days.
Dustin says, Indy Ben's such a damn genius. Well, we all pretty much have a zero football IQ as Titans fans. By the way, I was disappointed we didn't hear from Chad today.
Yeah.
Robbie. For Chad. And for anybody who missed it, yesterday Chad called us up right away. He's giving us some early calls. But he called the other day. Anyone who doesn't realize they must get Mendoza, what, has a zero football IQ? Is that right?
That's
zero.
Correct. Zero.
Just saying, my guy Dane Brugler, friend of the show, just put out his top 50. Fernando Mendoza is not his top quarterback. So I'm just saying. Like maybe,
I agree with Brugler.
Let's let some things play out. He has Ty Simpson as a higher prospect as number two on the top 50 with Mendoza at number seven. And by the way,
0.0.
Nice. Little Dean Wormer there. I didn't realize this, but he actually had Mendoza number 20 coming into the season. That's
pretty good.
That's pretty good intel because Mendoza snuck up on some people. But just we'll see. And Indy Ben, you're a little bit, you deserve a little bit of crap every now and then. Your team's doing great. You should be happy.
I mean, is Jonathan Taylor?
Oh, God.
Is Jonathan Taylor going to be in serious consideration for NFL MVP?
Well, he'll get like Offensive Player of the Year, which is the non-quarterback consolation prize. But after what he did last game,
he's number three on the list right now.
Okay, I mean, after what he did last game, it is kind of a. So let's see if we can piss off Otis and talk about another individual award. It is kind of the MVP this year is a little bit not obvious, right? Like, and some of the not usual suspects.
Co-favorites are May and Stafford.
Yeah, Drake May and Matthew Stafford.
Yeah.
I mean, that tells me that, like, anybody could rise up here in the last few weeks and grab it.
Jonathan Taylor's number three. This is on FanDuel. Mahomes is four. Allen is five. And guess who's at number six? Sammy D. Sam Darnold. Six on the MVP odds right now.
Yeah, he's pretty good. So, we're all sitting here saying, oh, that Mike Borgonzi, love that guy. just keep in mind Sam Darnold, and keep in mind Cam Ward, and a lot of things to find out still.
A lot of things to find out still. And again, I said it earlier in the show, the play caller, the firing the head coach early in the quarterback's tenure, not ideal. But if you make the right hire here for the next head coach, it doesn't really matter, right? Like if you hire the right guy, nobody's going to care that you fired Brian Callahan, you know, six games into Cam Ward's career or whatever it was.
Right?
Can you hire the right guy? It's pretty hard to me, Joe, to overstate how important this hire is for this franchise. They've had so much going wrong. They've had so much that they've just totally screwed up over the last few years. You've drafted a quarterback number one overall, and I think up and down is probably a kind way to describe the way that it's gone so far with him this year. You've got to find a way to make him hit, and the next head coach is going to play a pivotal role in that. And if you strike out and you don't hire the right coach, well, then all of a sudden, Joe, we're right back in a cycle where you're probably going to be looking for another quarterback. You're probably trying to hire another general manager, and eventually you're hiring another head coach at that point. Like, it is crucial that, in my opinion, Borgonzi, but whoever it is involved hiring this next head coach, get it right.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's and if you do, then like you said, then it's fine. It's fine. You know, you made the switch. I mean, I feel like maybe, you know, if you're going to do something like this, you know, again, same thing with Caleb, same thing with Drake. You do it right away, and it's like basic, you know, as opposed to maybe 2-3 years in would be more disruptive. I don't know. And there's a lot of, like, how many quarterbacks in this league, you know, who are great quarterbacks in this league or really good quarterbacks in this league have had to deal with, you know, coaching changes. Justin Herbert is one of those guys. He's had multiple guys. Fired, obviously, Maine Williams, you mentioned him.
They fired Wisenhunt right out from underneath Marcus.
That is
right
true.
Out underneath him.
They ruined him.
Next year, had the best year of his career.
Took away the wins.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. You know, then you get the people who've been given up on, like Baker and all those guys and Darnold. But,
yeah.
I mean, Stafford had multiple,
sure,
you know, coaches in Detroit.
It's not the automatic death sentence that some people make it out to be.
Right. No. Again, just like to me, it's kind of – I mean, I kind of put it in the same discussion point as just the idea of ruining the quarterback. I'm not saying it's not possible. I think it is possible. But I think there are people – again, I've heard Stilley say this about Marcus. He still says it. The Titans ruined him. Marcus just wasn't that good. We found out. He's a backup. He's a good backup. It's what he is. And so I think there's a lot of quarterbacks who maybe they would even say it themselves, or other fans would say it. They got ruined. Well, no, or did we just find out that they weren't good enough? I think 95% of the time we found out they aren't good enough. If you go look at some of the great quarterbacks who went through a lot of crap – and still were great, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you could argue that, well, iron sharpens iron.
Yeah. By the way.
Or whatever. Whatever cliche you want to apply to it.
Speaking of backup quarterbacks, and I apologize to our listeners for it taking me this long to really discuss it this week. There's been a lot going on. Did you see my guy Davis Mills, the way he played over the weekend?
Yeah. Stretch. No stretch that he can, yeah.
27 of 45. 292 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a pick for Davis Mills.
Comeback win.
Comeback win.
Extending his career as we speak.
Yes. You haven't had a chance to hit that
no.
Greatest hit in a while, man.
I did. I I've not paid enough attention to the Texans since the Titans played him because, frankly, who cares? But I forgot he was playing right now. So then I saw the highlights the other day, and I was like, man, look at that neck. It's unbelievable. it's getting bigger.
We'll probably see Stroud, I would think. He'd probably get out of concussion protocol,
yeah,
right, after 1 week.
Although
so.
I may sit there and play it safe and just let Davis get in there and sling it around a little bit.
Houston fans should, like, it's like when you go to the zoo and you, like, feed, you know, you have, like, the you can feed the giraffes. You, like, reach out a big thing of lettuce or something. Just bring that
it's
to
like,
the stadium.
This guy's neck is unbelievable. I'll say, though, too, like, if you go look at Ryan Tannehill's Pro Football Reference page right now, he's got a neck on him, too. Davis Mills, Ryan Tannehill, Mike Glennon. Got a neck on him.
I never really thought of Tannehill as having a big – I mean, he can't compare to Davis Mills.
Davis Mills is hard. But go look at Tannehill's Pro Football Reference picture. Like,
okay.
It's got a good neck on there.
Meanwhile, Diego Pavia has no neck. Is that going to hurt him?
I don't know.
In the draft process.
Do they measure?
See over the O-line there.
Do they measure neck size at the NFL Combine?
I don't know.
I mean, if so, Davis Mills would have been first-round pick.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. By the way,
measuring cheek size.
There will never be an offensive line that this guy can't see over, ever.
Speaking of the Texans, it's the Titans play them this week,
yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah. I was like, hey, we were looking at the NFL schedule during a break. I was like, hey, the Titans play the Texans this week.
The Titans play. They have a game.
A home game.
Yeah, it's at home, too. Wow.
Well, Houston's defense is playing well.
We'll dig in on that matchup tomorrow. PK being here. We will get hot and heavy in that big matchup.
Yeah, man.
Titans and Texans. Yeesh. But, hey, we are straddling the line. We're threading the needle of not really talking about Titans playing football because they're so bad at it, but also still not talking about the draft.
Yeah.
I'd say we're winning right now.
It's been pretty good stuff. And as I said earlier, we have another 2 months of discussing a Titans head coaching search.
Yeah.
Before anything really happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Get excited.
Should we – I mean, we have had no hesitation talking about the coaching search. Should we be trying to not?
No, I'm good with it.
Okay.
It's the most important thing going on with the team right now.
Yeah.
The head coaching search.
The players are going to be drafted are important too.
It's true. It's true. We'll get into all of it.
We'll try to wait.
That does it for us today. Next man up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.